Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey guys, this is Erica Ramirez, senior editor at Billboard. And on this week's Juice podcast, I have Jeff Sledge, former Jive A&R, also founder of Pop Life Podcast. Yes, I got it right first. Right. Yes. And my co-host again, Andrew Hamp.
Thanks for having me again.
So I wanted to dedicate a portion of this episode on Aaliyah's debut album, Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, because it actually turns 20 years old.
Crazy.
20. On Saturday. Jeff, you were at Jive. How were you around when she was actually signed to Jive?
Yes.
How was that signing? How was it? Who founded her?
Well, it was an interesting process because Jive. Well, let me just kind of backtrack a little bit. At that time, Jive was a privately owned company. I mean, we were distributed through major distribution, but it was owned by one guy, and his name was Clive Calder, and he was very involved with the whole A&R process and everything. So forward, we had signed R. Kelly. And R. Kelly, I think, had done two albums at that point, the first one and then 12 Play. So he was becoming hugely successful. R. Kelly was managed by a man named Barry Hankerson.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Hankerson's old-time music vet. And Aaliyah is Barry's niece.
Mm-hmm.
So she was from Detroit, and Barry used to always talk about his niece and stuff. And he had bought her to Jive when she probably was like 11 or 12, and Jive almost signed her, but not quite. Clive was like, she's almost there, but she needs a little more development. You know, of course, she was really, really young.
Yeah.
So he was like, Barry, like, I'm with you. Like, I get it, but just go back and develop her more. And so he did. And then I guess when she signed when she was like 14.
Yeah.
And the immediate plan was to put her and Robert together and in the course of a summer and them to make an album, and that's what happened.
So was this album recorded just within that summer?
Yep.
That summer?
One summer. Like, she got off of school in, you know, May, whatever, or June 1st, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And immediately went to Chicago, you know, which is very close to Detroit, and basically stayed in Chicago the whole summer. And they were in the studio, because, you know, Robert's a studio hawk. He's in there every day regardless.
Yeah.
So they were in the studio every day. And they would also kind of talk a lot and hang out and go to the movies, and he'd go play ball. And Robbins was so genius because in the course of that, he was constantly talking to her like, oh, so what kind of boys you like?
Yeah.
Oh, what kind of sneakers you like? And it was just kind of like a conversation, and he was like, he was filing.
Yeah.
So then when he started to write the records, he was like reflecting what a 15-year-old girl at that time would be about.
Yeah.
Right. So what sessions were you a part of?
Actually, it wasn't part of any of the sessions. And the funny thing is, nobody at Jive really was.
Right.
There was one guy, there's a guy who signed Robert, a guy named Wayne Williams. He went to a few sessions because he would always go. He lives in New York now, but at that time he was still living in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So he would kind of go by the studio and stuff to hang out. But basically, Robert and Aaliyah made the record.
Right. So it's pretty much just them two.
It was just them two. Yeah, it was just them two with Robert's, you know, musicians or whatever. Like, it wasn't like an A&R person. It was mm-hmm. like Robert was an A&R person.
Yeah.
He made the record and then they delivered it.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, shit, it's great. You know, but it wasn't like, go back and da 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 da. It was really like they really left Robert and Aaliyah to their own devices with Robert's crew to kind of, formulate the record.
So they didn't give anyone like a sneak peek before?
Not really. Not
That's
really.
Crazy.
I mean, if I remember correctly, because it's been such a long time ago, they might have floated the single, AJ, Back and Forth, excuse me.
Yeah.
They might have floated that to us early.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, the meat of the record, they didn't let most of us hear until it was done. We would have A&R meetings, and then we would play music and obviously in those meetings. And that's where most of us heard the records were in the A&R meeting. It was like, oh man, this is really coming together. But no, it wasn't like, oh, here's one, here's one. What do you think? It was a very different process than kind of what happens now.
Yeah.
Very different.
So it was a self-contained record when it was handed in. Like, you didn't ask them to go back for anything.
No.
Wow.
No. You know, Robert, I mean, at that time, you have to also remember, Robert was probably in his 20s.
Yeah.
So he, you know, so he was very, very connected to the kind of youth culture and stuff too.
Totally.
So he and Clive and all of us, you know, trusted him explicitly that he is like a genius. Like, I tell people that all the time. Like, he's the most talented artist I've ever seen. Ever.
Because he's a one-stop shop.
He can do anything. Yeah. I've seen this dude sit at the piano playing Nat King Cole songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can do anything. So with that level of talent, and then he's like a real street guy. He came into projects, like, so he just kind of blends all that together. So we knew that he would make a great record. So it wasn't, like you said, it was like a one-stop shop.
Yeah. So, because obviously, I mean, the album was named both after the song Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, but it's named because, you know, she was ahead of her time. So at what point did you choose to kind of use her age, her relative youth, as kind of the marketing tool for this project?
You saw it in the first video, the back and forth video, you know, with, you know, it was just a very young video, you know, them dancing, they're kind of out at the playground or whatever. Like, it was never a plan to kind of, you know, sometimes you get an artist that's very young and they kind of like mask it a little bit or try to hide the fact that they're really young. Mm-hmm. That was never a plan. It was always a plan to play up the fact that she was this very young girl and very like young, vibrant, you know, kind of creative girl. So, yeah, and if I remember correctly, I think Robert might have named the album. I think he might have named the album as well, you know. So it was, you know, it was just, yeah, it was never a plan to kind of like hide the fact that she was 15 years old. We wanted girls of that age around the country for her to be like their rep, their representative and their hero, you know?
Absolutely. Right. The brilliance of that phrase too is that on the song, you know, it's based off a Bobby Caldwell sample. So it's like something that's, you know, got lots of nods to the old school, but still felt very current to the times, you know, and she's got like the Marvin Gaye cover with At Your Best. Like, that's why it was so great for its time, is that it fused all these old school references, but, you know, was so relevant to the kids.
Yeah. But then At Your Best thing was a trip too, because they had the original, and then he flipped it, like, mm-hmm. with the remix,
with the remix,
the drums and all that, and made it real funky. Like, so he was like so in his own at that point. Like, and he was just in his own. Like, anything he did was just incredible, you know. And she was like his muse. Like, she literally was his muse. Like, you know, she brought a lot to the table too. She wasn't writing or anything, but she actually had a lot of ideas.
Well, sounds like he made your job easy. But what were you able to contribute?
Honestly, like, the one thing I did, and I always tell the story because it was kind of funny, because me and Barry Hankerson had a great relationship. And so they wanted me to sequence the record, the album, when it came in and was done, right? So I took time. You know, that was one of the things I was always pretty good at, like kind of making an album flow. So I took time and like locked my office doors and I'm going through the records. Nah, that don't fit. Nah, nah, nah. You know, it took a couple hours of trying stuff out or whatever. And so I got what I thought was really good. And then Hankerson came to town because he didn't live in New York. He lived in L.A. He still does, actually. He came to town and I was like all nervous, like, all right, yo. You know, he's coming to my office. And I'm like, all right, Barry, I got the sequence, man. Like, here you go. Like, what do you think? And I'm thinking, I got, like, the tape set up. You know, at that time, it was, like, that tapes and everything. So I got the tape set up to kind of play the sequence. And he just kind of looked at the paper, and he was like, you like this shit? And I was like, yeah, I think it sounds good. He was like, well, fuck it, that's the sequence then. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, and that was the sequence for the album. Like, there was no problems. And I kept waiting for things. I kept waiting for, like, Robert to call me or Aaliyah's people to call me and say, nobody ever called. And that became the sequence of the album.
Wow.
You know, so it's very kind of, you know, it was just all feeling, you know. It was just like a good, it was just all feeling all around that record. It was just kind of like people just working organically. And the way it felt, if it felt good, you just went with it.
So as you were listening to it for the first time, or the entire album for the first mm-hmm. time, what were some things that kind of stood out to you, whether it be the first time you ever heard an artist say or...
Well, you know what? It was interesting. It's interesting about that album because he found a way to Because her vocal isn't like a powerhouse vocal. It's not mm-hmm. like Monica or somebody, like a real big kind of churchy mm-hmm. kind of vocal. It's a, you know, very light, very pretty, pretty vocal. So he found a way to marry that light, pretty vocal with like a lot of some hard, a lot of hard edge stuff.
Yep.
And I was always kind of I was going to say concerned, but that's completely the wrong word. But I was curious mm-hmm. to see how he was going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
'Cause she didn't, like I said, she didn't have the you know, like a Patti LaBelle voice or something like that, which right. is, you know, people kind of expect from a black female artist. But he found a way to balance it, you know. And then obviously with all the subject matter, you know, At Your Best, Ain't You a Number, Back and Forth, like he found a way to really kind of speak to young girls, you know. And it's always interesting, like, you know, over time, you know, you work at a label, you know, and you work at a label for a long time like I did. And, you know, obviously the label puts out a lot of records. You know, some you worked on, some you didn't, whatever, but you're around for stuff, so you see stuff. And then you never really know, like, the impact that records have. You don't really, even if they sell, you don't really know the impact. So then later, as she, you know, she left Jive, and then later on she went to Atlantic and became a big artist or whatever. But then people always look, like, harken back. Obviously, the Timbaland and the Missy stuff is, you know, Hall of Fame level, right?
So, absolutely.
But people still would always harken back to the first album, and it was always like, damn, like, this album had, like, way more impact on – and what I mean by that is, like, when we would do showcases and stuff, and, like, you know, girls would come in, or, like, it'd be a girl group, and we'd say, like, you know, what do you listen to? What do you like? And so many times people would bring her up.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it wasn't fake, because a lot of people didn't realize their first album was on Jive.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it wasn't like they researched it and was like, oh, we're going to say Jive because we're at Jive.
Right.
People didn't really, they would say stuff and like, oh, yeah, that was our album. And they'd be going, really? I didn't know. So it was just showed the impact that the album had and that she had on people was just way deeper than I realized. It was just, you know, she was a trendsetter.
Totally.
Way more than I kind of thought.
Oh my God, talk about trendsetter.
Yeah, like, I mean, way more than I thought, yeah. You know?
Brandy and Monica always bring her up in terms of paving the way, because she was out a full year before they
exactly.
really
exactly. She was the first one, and then yeah. those two came. Then I think Brandy was second and Monica was third.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, it was just a bug out to see how far, how deep those roots on that record reached people. You don't really know, you know?
Right. I know that, have you spoken to Barry as in regards to the unreleased music that he wants to put out of Aaliyah's?
I haven't actually. I haven't spoken to Barry in a minute. We kind of lost touch. I know via another person I work with, Faith Newman, mm-hmm. who signed Nas, and then she worked at Jive for a long time. She's now doing publishing. And I think that she did a deal with Barry, and so that unreleased stuff is kind of like her publishing company is kind of involved with putting that album together. So I've kind of spoken to her, but I haven't actually spoken to Barry.
Right. Personally, you know, seeing your relationship with Aaliyah and R. Kelly, how do you feel about having unreleased Aaliyah music out 2014?
You know what, man? I don't, it doesn't really bother me, because a couple things. It doesn't really bother me because obviously she left to me, and I'm sure everybody else, she left too soon. So it wasn't like she put out 10 albums.
Right.
So people are still very hungry to hear her stuff. And I know with Barry and Jomo, who's Barry's son, involved with the project, it's going to be done well. You know, and Timbaland and Missy will chime in and stuff. So it's going to be done well. So I don't have a problem with it, because I know the gatekeepers are going to do a great job. And the other thing I just want to say is, like, and maybe because I'm a fan of his, but I thought the whole people kind of going hard on Drake when he was trying to do it, I thought it was whack. It was like he's dope. Like, he's yeah. dope. And so is 40. Like, they're dope.
Oh,
like,
no,
who
absolutely.
Else should do this but them? I mean,
right.
but so I don't, you know, I'm sure there's other things that happened business-wise maybe that I don't know about. But I just felt the backlash was kind of like, come on, man.
Well, I think the backlash came because there was, like, reports that Aaliyah's mother and her brother were not, like, with the whole having them release music. And I think,
yeah.
I know recently Noah 40 said that that's why he kind of had to take a step back, because he didn't want to kind of get involved in that
yeah,
situation.
And I know, not surprisingly, but, you know, when she passed away, like, you know, went to the services and everything. And for a while, I used to live in White Plains, and so did his Aaliyah's mom. Mm-hmm. So I would, like, kind of see her, you know, randomly, sometimes, like, on the street and stuff, you know. And, like, Aaliyah's death was just, like, such a brutal thing to her. Like, not, you know, obviously not surprising, but it was just, it hurt her so deeply that I could see her having issues just because it's kind of like digging up old wounds as well. Like, it's just a hard thing, I think, for her to deal with. She took it, like, really, really, and her brother as well, like, really, really hard. Like, everybody did. It was terrible, you know. So I hope we get the music just because I'm a fan.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I could, from, you know, being kind of seeing the inside, I could see how it might not happen because, you know, her mom is very, still very devastated by her loss, you know.
Yeah,
you want it for the right reasons.
Yeah, I don't want it just because it's selfishly because I don't want to hear it. If the family's not into it, then I don't, you know, then I understand that, you know. So it's not me that has to deal with that pain every day.
Right.
You know, so I totally get it.
I remember you just said how, you know, when Aaliyah and R. Kelly were working on the album, it was just pretty much them two till, you know, they previewed it to the label. Was R. Kelly always like that as far as the music that he's worked on, whether it be his or someone else? Is it mostly just him and the artist or himself with his stuff?
No, Robert would send stuff sometimes. He would send stuff sometimes. If he felt like he had, you know, a monster or whatever, he would send stuff. Or Wayne, who I spoke about earlier, who was his A&R person, would bring stuff, you know, back from Chicago and be like, God, here's a record Robert wrote or here's a record that Robert did. So we would hear stuff from Robert. He wasn't as tight with his stuff. But like that, you know, and the thing is, I don't think that he was being, like, tight with the Aaliyah stuff. It was just that they were in a zone, they were working, and we didn't kind of want to mess up their zone. So we just didn't bother them. But I'm sure if we'd have asked Robert to send records, he would have. We just didn't. Because, like, you know what? Let them do what they do. We trust that he's going to do the right thing, you know?
Right.
So it wasn't, like, a secret. It was just like, hey, they're in Chicago, they working, you know? And we were just going about our day, you know, doing whatever. And then, then we heard the stuff, like, you know, it was like, oh, shit, this is incredible, you know?
Right. At that time at Jive, were you guys, you know, with R. Kelly and Aaliyah working so closely together, like the rumors of, you know, personal chemistry or relationships kind of came after. Did you guys even see that coming? Did that kind of take you back?
No, nobody saw that coming.
Right.
Nobody saw that coming.
That just came out of, I'm not necessarily sure exactly when it happened. I assume it was like right after.
It was like summer of 94, I thought,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like probably
well,
right.
What happened, I mean, again, and let me preface this by saying, obviously, I'm not saying anything to condone anything that happened. But what happened was Robert's mom died in the process of them making the record. And Robert was extraordinarily close to his mom. She was she was his muse, you know.
Right.
She was an inspiration for him in a lot of ways and stuff. And so it was a traumatic experience. And so that trauma made him and Aaliyah become very close, because a lot of times in the studio, like, it would just be them two, and he'd be like obviously crying and, you know, going through whatever he was dealing with, trying to deal with the loss of his mom, and like she would be the one kind of there comforting him, you know, because they were working together so closely. Again, not condoning anything, but I think that's what kind of got the lines fuzzy.
Right.
You know, I think that was it, you know, really.
Yeah. Did you guys, when all that was going around, did you guys take a step back, or were you involved in kind of settling
it? It was very tricky because, you know, it was very tricky. Like, we didn't take a step back because her album came out and well, and Robert put out we call it the Blue Album, the R. Kelly album. It was 95, so, like, everybody was still working, but it was definitely weird, you know what I mean? And, you know, we weren't, you know, nobody talked to the press, nobody was allowed to do press, and that's when all the, you know, Vibe was doing the crazy stories and everything, and we would just come, was trying to do damage control as much as possible. But it was a trying time, because it was a lot going on, you know. I mean, and this is going to sound weird, but as bad as that was, God bless it, that wasn't today. Like, could you imagine with Twitter and the blog?
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It was no blogs, there was none of that. So imagine with blogs and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and blah, blah, blah. It would be just no TMZ. It would have just been, oh my, I don't even know. I can't even wrap my mind around what would happen if something like that was going on now.
Yeah. Well, because that's – which speaks to the power of the music, because that's why if you didn't know, if you just heard back and forth on the radio, you'd be like, oh, that's a hot song. Like, mm-hmm. I need to check out the record. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't even – you know, the tabloid stuff wouldn't overlap with the music as much.
Yeah,
on all the
stuff. Yeah, now it would be – every tabloid stuff would lead everything. The music would be like sixth place.
Totally.
You know.
Yeah, but I don't know. That whole situation gave the album another feel. I mean,
it did.
From the title of the song to the songwriting to R. Kelly being in the background of the album cover.
In the background of the videos.
Right. Stuff. It gave that album
a narrative.
Yeah. How did you guys feel about that? About it kind of playing that part also?
From what I remember, it worked.
Right.
You know, it sold. The album did, was a 1 or 2 million. It was 1 and change. I don't know. It's probably around 2
I know
now.
Yeah. Just the minute that Back and Forth came out.
Yeah, it was over.
Like, yeah.
It was just over, you know.
It was the first single. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it worked. So we're in the business of selling records, and the records were selling. You know what I'm saying? So it was all good.
Yeah.
And there was also, you know, kind of the air of mystery around her, because you always saw her in shades, right? Like her image was very carefully, like,
very.
You know.
Very, very carefully planned, like, you know, like a lot of black.
Yep.
So she wore a lot of black, you know, the leather, like you said, the she had the bandanas and shades on and stuff. Yep. And even later, she had the hair over one eye. It was always like, people used to be like, oh, is she cross-eyed or she's blind in one eye? It was like, nah, it was just
that's
like you
style.
Said, it was that air of mystery that, you know, that she had, you know, in her whole style with the big jeans hanging low and everything. It was just, you know, she had the crazy swag, you know. So that was, That was interesting to watch too, because she went to like what's the basically the version of the Fame High School in Detroit.
Oh right.
Yeah, so she went. She was a very creative girl. You know, like she knew what she was doing.
Yeah,
right.
She had to craft an image.
Yeah, she knew what she was doing. It wasn't just willy nilly. You know.
So did she come with that style, or did she kind of did she evolve to that style while recording?
No, well, she was always kind of, she always dressed kind of tomboy-y.
Right.
You know, if that's a word, I don't know if that's a real word. But tomboy-y, and then that tomboyishness, again, probably not a word, evolved into what she ended up wearing and looking like, you know? Which is why, like, later on, like, you know, when she started doing the movies and started wearing, like, dresses and gowns, it was like, oh, shit. Like, you know, because we're so used to her wearing the big jeans and, like I said, the shades and da-da-da. But, yeah, but again, all her style was her. It was no stylist.
Yeah,
that was her. Like, no, I'm wearing this, I'm wearing that. You know, I'm wearing this, and obviously, the more money she got, the she was able to get the better versions of it.
But right,
it was her.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just crazy how 20 years later, we still have girls wearing the crop tops and the baggy jeans and the shades, and not only fashion wise, just also, you know, the type of vocals that we're hearing from like rising R&B singers. It's very reminiscent to Aaliyah.
Mm-hmm.
Are there artists out there right now that kind of your ears perk up and you think of Aaliyah when you see or hear them?
That's a really good question. No, nobody off the top of my head, but maybe just because I'm not thinking of anybody. I don't know.
What about you?
Well, it's funny because and I'm sure you do as well, Erica, I hear from labels like, you know, we think this could be the next Aaliyah. Like, we haven't had one of those in a minute. Like, you'll definitely hear that. Like, RCA definitely feels that about Tinashe,
for example. Oh, the Tinashe girl.
There's another singer, Jessie Ware, who openly, like, shouts out Aaliyah. And she did a cover of What You Wanna Do For Love. And at the end of it, made a melodic reference. Like, she did the, I don't want to be bold. Like, she does that.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Is she from England, Jessie Ware?
She is.
Yeah, I've heard of her. Mm-hmm.
So there's like, you know, people who are basically positioning themselves as the next Aaliyah. Labels who want to essentially make that happen.
Yeah, there's nobody off the top of my head, but I mean, you know, God bless. You know, if somebody's out there is the next one, let's hear it. Let's go for it. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's. I mean, I know that there's many that are very influenced by them. I know that Rochelle Jordan is. You know, she did a cover "One in a Million," mm-hmm. and she's like a new R&B singer.
She's from Canada.
I believe so. I believe so. And then there's also a group named Unbutton, which also did a "One in a Million" cover. And okay. there's clearly countless of covers, you could tell there, you know, and also Drake and Kendrick Lamar and A$AP Ferg.
Drake is blatant, like,
yes,
for his love of her. You know,
he has a tattoo of her.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly,
that love is out there. But yeah, I think it's crazy how 20 years we still have, you know. The influence is very, very apparent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there, what other moments kind of in the AJ Nothing But a Number era do you remember?
Just two of the things I remember is just kind of like how impactful the back and forth video and then the At Your Best video with her and Robert. Like I just remember like when those, I mean, again, it's a different era, so videos were way more impactful then than now because it wasn't on YouTube and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just remember like, you know, us seeing those videos in the office for the first time and just being like, damn, like, this shit is really, really, really gonna go, you know? Yeah. And hearing that Steppers remix of At Your Best for the first time was like, just the way he flipped the whole record, it was crazy, you know? And again, just the impact of those videos and like watching, like you said, like, girls starting to dress like her,
right.
At that, I was doing A&R. I had just come out of promotions. But, you know, when you're working on a label kind of like Jive back then, everybody would, like, always have people would call you and ask you for records. Like, oh, can you send me this CD or send me that CD? Like, so that, and that was always, like, a gauge of what was really working. Mm-hmm. And I misremember, like, people just, like, constantly, like, yo, send me the Aaliyah album. Send me Aaliyah tape. Send me the Aaliyah album. Send me the Aaliyah, yo, send me two. All my little cousin wants. I just remember, like, it just, like, the swirl around it and like everybody just wanting it and like it gets the questions, yo, was she, how come she never shows her eyes and like what's she really like and is she really 15 and like all the people just kind of like wanting to know more and more about this girl was crazy, you know. And then she was like a really nice, sweet girl. I mean, again, she was really young back then, but she was a nice girl, man. Just like a nice, sweet girl. Like she'd come up sometime, we'd do like brunches or lunches and stuff and with the staff, and she was just like, her and her mom would come, and they would just kind of sit there, and very, very polite, very poised, you know, and just a nice girl.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just a really, like, no attitude, no, you know, no stinkiness or, you know, no bitchiness. She was just a really sweet person, like, for real, you know?
Yeah. And I know, Hamp, you, we talked about a little earlier about just kind of the mystery around Aaliyah, and I think it's funny that you say that she's always kind of had that mystery around her, because that definitely followed her throughout her entire career. That's also like what was appealing about her. You always wanted to know more about Aaliyah just by even looking at her.
Yeah.
I wanted, I don't know, Hamp, if you wanted to still talk about Aaliyah, but I wanted to switch up gears and talk about some new music. Jeff, you have some ears to music that we probably haven't heard of or don't know of. Is it, what are you listening to, or what have you kind of came across that you're kind of excited for?
More recently?
Yes.
You know what? Let me go. Well, there's one kid I love who I've had the opportunity to meet as well, and I think he's amazing. And I don't know if you might have heard him. It's this kid named Jordan Bratton. He's a kid from Long Island, but he works out of Jersey.
I think he just performed in New York. Like,
yeah, pianos a couple weeks ago. Yeah. He's done some other stuff, too. So he's starting to get around. And, like, this kid is, like if you could take, it's going to sound strong, but it's real. If you could take, like, a little Michael and a little Stevie and even, like, a little Prince and push them together. But it's very young and now.
Yeah. Right.
It doesn't sound retro.
Right.
But if you know those artists, you hear them in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's not, he's not like doing Ribbon in the Sky Over. But right. you hear right. like sir, because he plays all kinds of instruments. You hear like a piano riff and be like, that's some Stevie type shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I love him. I'm going through my phones because so I won't get caught out there forgetting something.
We don't have enough like dudes at the piano, so that's good. Yeah.
Exactly. We need more of that. We need more of that, especially young guys.
Yeah.
I love Young Thug.
Yeah.
I love Young Thug. I hope he makes it. I know he's got, you know, he's on the lean and he's a little, kind of a kook. But when he rhymes, like the way he rhymes is so ill because he's like, the way he moves on the track is so crazy. It's almost like listening to like a saxophone player.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's like, but it makes sense. Like, I don't even know. I'd love to watch him record. I would love to like be in the studio and just watch him do his vocals because I don't even know how he's coming up with that.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't, even if with the drugs and all that, you can't just make that shit up. Like he's got a real talent there. I just hope he makes it. I love Party Next Door.
Yep.
A lot. He's supposed to be coming out with a new mixtape this summer sometime.
Good.
So I'm looking forward to that.
That's great.
I love Tink.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Tink. We had her in here like a year and a half ago. And she just put out a song with Kalila, which I'm obsessed
over. The other Kalila record. Yeah, yes. That's the kid that produced Worst Behavior, I think. He produced it.
Oh, wow.
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. So I love him. Her, excuse me. I'm loving... Young Dro. I love this. He got a record out called Grits. I love that. So I'm liking a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. There's, so I'm obsessed over Nicki Minaj's Pills and Potions.
Are you? You're obsessed?
I really, really like it. I was, you know, she put out Chirac and she put out a couple other remixes. So and
I loved her on Danny Glover.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I was expecting, you know, I was wondering what was coming up next and when I could hear her sing. Because I really do think that Nicki has a good voice.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gotten better at singing. So I was excited to hear it. But it's very catchy is what I like. And it's a great transition from her singing to her rapping. And Dr. Luke produced it. So what do you think of the song?
I love it. I think it bridges all the right gaps for her coming off of, you know, kind of the EDM pop that she was doing on Roman Reloaded to where she needs to be, which is, you know, reconnecting with her flows, with her rhymes, but also like showcasing her vocals on the hooks. And I think it does that. And it tells a story.
Yes.
Like, you love the emo-ness,
I'm sure. I love the emo-ness.
You're a big emo person.
I'm a big emo. And the minute she said that this album was going to be more stripped down, and it's like that, you know, Pills and Potions is a true story, and the mm-hmm. album's a true story, I was like, I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that, at least with me, I'm able to connect a lot more knowing that these are things that she's actually experienced. With any artist, things that, you know, you've actually experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also, you know, a look into her life without her having to explain every bit of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's also why I really like the song. What's your thoughts on Nicki? Nicki.
I think I like where she's going because I think she from the first album to the second, she swung the pendulum too far, too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like she went from, you know, Your Love and Moment of My Life and all that, and she just swung so hard the other way, like you said, with the super EDM stuff and super bass and all mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm. And you know, and the way she was rhyming, it was too much cartoonish stuff going mm-hmm. on. With
yeah,
it, you know, with the voices and everything, I feel like she almost lost a lot of her core fans with the second album because again, it's like taking a car and just making a hard turn. It's like everybody's gonna swing in the car.
Yeah.
So now I feel like she's finding, like he said, the balance.
Yeah.
Like where it's like, okay, here's super bass fans will like this, but so will the fans who love the Moment of My Life and the mixtapes.
Yeah.
Like it'll now she kind of has everybody on board now.
Yeah.
And she's found her zone and now she's running away. And I also did love the fact that she like rhymed over Danny Glover
mm-hmm.
and like rhymed over some kind of more like street kind of, you know, Atlanta Ratchet records.
Yeah.
Just to show that, yo, I can still do this like really, really well.
Yeah.
And I haven't forgotten my roots kind of thing. Because those are her roots.
Yeah.
So I like where she's going. And I'm very excited to hear the album, to hear where she's going to go. I'm very interested to hear where you know, where it's going to go. I think she's found her space. I think, and also I really think, and people don't, I hear say this a lot, I really think she's very heavily influenced by Drake.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like she tries to rap like Drake or anything like that, but I think that Drake's kind of openness and like, you know, telling about his life and all that, I think that she's influenced by that, and I think this will be like her So Far Gone, this new album.
Yeah.
Or her Take Care. It'll be like, oh, shit, okay. Now I understand what she's been dealing with, you know?
Because they're both people, too, who can do it all.
Yeah.
But they're both realizing with their respective album cycles that they need to focus on doing like one or two things really well. Like, you know, because Drake broke out singing his own hooks as well, but knew that people still want to like hear him flow a little bit.
Exactly.
So I think she's focusing on what she does best with this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, another kid I'm very interested in is this kid, Rory.
Oh, Rory.
Yeah.
He has a special place in my heart. I premiered his first song, God
Whisper. Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he's actually having like a 1 day Warfest festival in Atlanta for his 18th birthday.
Really?
Yeah. So I have a good feeling about him too. I feel like
I do too.
Yeah.
I think he's got a lot of potential. He's young, and I think he needs to learn. He needs some A&R to learn how to kind of make records. But God's Whisper was dope, and then the Sunshine record.
Mm-hmm.
The Sunshine record was dope, but it was the arrangement is off. It's like all the elements of dopeness are there, but they just come in a weird order.
Yeah.
But it's okay. He's only 18. It's fine.
Yeah.
He's just went to prom. Like, I'm not. It's fine. He'll figure it out. You know what I'm saying? I like him too.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I just remembered. Yeah, the one album I cannot wait for, and I know you're a Prince fan, so you might know these girls. You know King?
No.
King,
oh my God. You know them?
Yes. When is their album? When are they?
Sometime this year, they keep saying. They're playing Essence. I'm so excited.
Is this Prince's group?
No, but he's just one of many artists that Prince kind of like unofficially mentored. They've opened for him a couple times.
What's their vibe like?
Their vibe is like 80s Quiet Storm R&B. Like Jam and Lewis, but they're sisters, I think, or it's three girls from LA. Their voices blend like crazy. So like Quiet Storm meets Neo Soul, so good. Like,
they got a mixtape out?
They have an EP that came out 3 years ago.
Yeah, I remember
now.
Seeing them at Summer Stage at Central Park like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They've been around for a long ass minute, but they've only put out like 5 tracks.
All right. Well, I'm a download today. It sounds interesting.
It's so good. Like they're on the first Robert Glasper LP, so that also kind of gives you a feel for what they're like. Just like really cool. Futuristic old school R&B, if that's
okay.
A thing.
All right, cool. I'm gonna check it out.
Oh, that just made I could speak about R&B and what like I can't wait for Frank Ocean.
Absolutely.
I'm very excited.
You like Weekend?
I'm really excited for Frank Ocean. I was speaking to James Fauntleroy, and he was just saying how people think that they work together, they collaborate, but he says that he just kind of takes a step back and just watches James Fauntleroy work. Like, he writes his own songs and does everything. Yeah, he just like, I'm there if he needs me to like talk it out. He's like, but he does everything.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, thanks for teasing me. And
yeah. Does Fauntleroy still want to do his own stuff?
Yeah. So he put out the String Acoustic Theory, I believe it's called, the EP. Like, he teased a song like 6 songs throughout 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
And he just put it out a couple of days ago. And he's working on... He said he went and sang some stuff for Kanye, Kanye's new album.
Okay.
He's has been collaborating with Rihanna. And then says that he wants to...
He's in the Rock Nation family.
Right, so that
yeah.
makes sense. He's also working on his new album, which he says he wants to work closely with Timbaland and Justin Timberlake. He said those are the two key players that he wants on his official album.
Those are two big players.
Yeah. I mean, which, you know, they've known each other for a long time. They've worked with each other.
Yeah. I mean, he's everyone's secret weapon right now.
Right.
But he, you know... He's smart to seize the moment and put himself forward a little bit. Yeah.
So we have to wrap up this this week's episode of the Juice Podcast. And you guys can let me know what you guys think on Twitter at 3Rica. Jeff, what's your Twitter handle?
I am Jeff Sledge.
And Hamp.
A-Hamp, A-H-A-M-P-P.
So you guys could... Oh, I like that last part. So you guys could let us know what you think on Twitter. And I will talk to you guys next week.